score at Ashton Gate. It finished City 2, Luton 3. I was on a wave of optimism at about quarter to two because we went in at half-time 2-0 up. Joining me this afternoon are Ian and Mark and a grand total of almost 50 people taking time off of their lovely sunny afternoon to listen to us having a moan as we do and as indeed it's going to be for another hour or until such time as we've all had enough of talking about it. Ian and Mark, as we normally do, you first, Ian, 30 seconds on the game as a whole without going into detail of any incidents, but just your thoughts on this afternoon.
Classic game of two halves. First half, much better. As somebody said on Twitter, throwback to Alf Ramsey in the World Cup with having wide players who aren't actually wingers. Second half, Luton brought on their first-choice strikers. And as I expected and hoped wouldn't happen, we fell apart. And unfortunately, that is really all you can... all you can say about the game.
Yeah. Mark, your two pennyworth on the overall on the game without going into the individual incidents.
Calling AC12, City's defensive line of duty was compromised three times in 15 chaotic minutes in the second half, but City were warned at the end of the first half, comfortable at 2-0 up. Luton always looked like they had some chances, and City duly obliged with Callas making some real howlers and Bentley so often exposed.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's it. As Liam said on here, thank God there were no fans in the ground. We look at the lineup today. There was sort of no real surprise in there. Pham injured. I like somebody put a gif up on Twitter with a sniggering face on there. Pham injured. I really hope we don't see him in a City shirt again, but it did mean a start for Tommy Conway. Ian, any surprise with the lineup? I mean, it was that midfield quartet that individually looked good on paper, but collectively are like four strangers, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I was disappointed with the lineup before the game. I said, I hope I'm wrong, but I think it looks like another defeat.
Yeah,
and it was a defeat. In fairness, Conway, I thought, looked lively up front. Naki Wells benefited from having a partner. I think you could say that. And I like the look of, is it Alex Scott?
Yeah.
When he came on, touch of the Jack Grealish is about him, a little bit of a swagger.
Yeah.
Seems to get stuck in, get his head up and want to pass the ball. Those were the things that impressed me today. But the first half...
Let's get into the individual incidents. This is a bit better,
but the second half, Bristol City turned up, it's as bad as it's ever been.
I mean, Mark, one thing I noticed, well, tell me what was different about the first half compared to most of City's games whenever you watch them. What was unusual about the second, well, when they lined up to kick off? Because I tell you, I noticed it. I'm sure other people did as well.
Thomas Callas was the only player that stood up during the taking of the knee.
I did notice that. The other thing I noticed as well, that we were kicking towards the south stand, and we normally do that in the second half. So there we go. So let's get into the action. I mean, we started brightly, and Nag and Cess, and both of them had okay games. Maybe we'll talk about them as individuals later. But, I mean, the visitors, Mark, they had the ball in the back of the net after from a corner, wasn't it? Callas deflected Adebayo's shot, and it was same old Bristol City, wasn't it? You know, it was lucky to get that
Dewsbury Hall, all of his corners were great. He was playing in-swingers, they were right on the money. I think the only team I've seen play corners right under the barrel like that was Barnsley when we played them. So the keeper is always going to be under pressure, but it was a free kick. I think, I'm sure if it was Clark backed into Bentley and it was a foul, but it did worry you when every time we gave crosses away because we gave corners away because we give so many goals away from set pieces.
You just think they're going to score. I mean, Ian, the first goal came. I mean, City were looking okay. They were passing it. There was lots of positives. And the first ball came when I think it was Viner sent the ball to Nash, turned past two players and released the ball. Confident finish by Wells. I mean, that goal sort of epitomised what Naki Well is there to do, playing in a central role. But it was good build-up play overall, wasn't it, the opening goal?
Yeah, and it shows that I think particularly if he had a... If you took Kiefer Moore out of the Cardiff team and put him up front for us and played Naki next to him, you'd have a 20-goal-a-season striker.
Hmm.
But he lacks that support. And although Conway made some good runs in behind, a la Sam Bell, when he played, I think we obviously lack physicality right the way through the team. And some of the players I've heard were linked with would assume that Pearson knows that. So I think excellent finish. I don't think the keeper got off his line quick enough, if I'm being honest, to stop
Wells. Yeah.
He didn't narrow the angle very well, but yeah, well, got a chance, stuck it in the onion bag, 1-0.
And he'd had a chance just before that when he took one in the face, didn't he? Yeah. So
correct.
That was it. Second goal, Mark. It gave City the 2-goal lead, and again, it was well crafted. Lansbury, Callis's header. Wells did a save, and there was Naj nicking in to score. We were looking good value for that 2-0 win at that time, weren't we?
Yeah, and there were lots of forward passes, and the reason that Wells put the ball away, he needs the ball, he needs good service through the centre of the pitch, and he will score you goals. He might have been a bit off recently, but giving the ball in front of goal there, and he'll stick it away. And this time, Slugo, who the commentator kept calling Slugger.
I thought it sounded
like an amateur boxer, didn't it?
Yeah, or somebody from the A-team, Clubber Lang, that was, wasn't it? Yeah, but
he pushed the ball away, and it was a good goal by Naj because it was at an acute angle, and he still managed to get it in the far side of the net. And City looked comfortable, but even then, at the end of that first half, Luton were still chipping away, and they had chances, as you'll probably allude to in a minute.
Well, I mean, at the end, just before both of our goals, Clark shot just wide, and then literally on the stroke of half time, it was a smart save from Bentz after a Clark header. So they were there or thereabouts. But I thought 2-0. Well, we're gonna roll out comfortably on this 3-0, 3-1, something like that. Ian, right at the start of the second half, Naj and Conway, again, good through ball to Conway from Naj, and he did a lovely little pullback for Masengo, and even the sniffing Taylor Moore admitted shooting isn't his strong point. I'm wondering what is his strong point, because if you go 3-0 up 6 minutes into the second half, mind, we're Bristol City, but that was a bad miss, really, wasn't it? Because it wasn't like he had to rush it. Would you agree with that, Ian? Hello, Ian?
Do you want me to pick up?
Sorry,
from
mate.
There?
Yeah, go on.
Oh,
go
sure,
on.
Mate.
Sorry,
go
mate.
On.
It's all right, Mark. I'm back in. I was on mute.
A miss by Masengo, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what I keep saying about Han is he's never going to get you a goal and he's never going to get you an assist. So what is he?
Yeah.
And you, for me, you can't have players in midfield unless you've got what I call a purely defensive midfielder like a McAnally, like a Cisse, that never scores. You can only have one at best, or possibly you can have two of them if you go for a 4-2-3-1, which we haven't got the players to play. But we have to make our mind up about Han and what he is, because I see someone with a great work ethic, some ability. This is not fantastic ability, let's be honest, but some ability that seems to have decreased. His physicality has improved, but his ability has decreased since he joined our club.
Yeah.
That would have to be a worry. And you could say the same. All the midfielders have got something that you look at and you think, that's not quite right. Backinson, big lad. Not very good at defending in the air. Not very good at the air, full stop. And he seems to run out of steam after about 60 minutes. So there's stamina questions. You don't get that with Masengo. He'd play for 120 minutes, never mind 90. And then you go into midfield, Naj. Nice touches at times. Goal and assist today.
Yeah.
But is he strong enough? And the answer to that is no.
And the other question, Lansbury is
getting a lot of stick, but it's funny that when Lansbury goes off, we keep conceding goals.
Well, the other thing as well, I thought second half, I mean, Backinson's played well in the games recently, but the second half, he was the invisible man. But let's go into the goal glut. Just before the goal, in fact, just after that Masengo miss, we had a shape of things to come when Connick took a throw. Sess miskicked it, and you sort of just praised Lansbury a little bit there, but he turned his back on the ball, and you don't want to see pros doing that. I think Tommy Rowe, who we say is a good club man and all the rest of it, he ducked when I think it might have been a corner came in late on. But, you know, you don't want pros to be turning their backs on the ball, do you? I know one of their blokes took one full in the face from Lansbury, but what do you think of that, Ian? As a pro, you should just face up, shouldn't you? And he didn't. And that was defensive mayhem at that time, just before their opening goal.
Yeah, it's a good. To be honest, the guy that took one in the face had no choice. He was just running in to do a block tackle. Lansbury got there before and larruped it. And sometimes you have to do that. You can't always, you know, there's a tendency in football these days to think that if you're not playing four passes in your own 6-yard box, you're not a football team. And I think sometimes if you look at what we did right in the first half, we passed the ball forward, we passed it to feet, and we passed it in the channel.
Yeah.
Second half, we larruped it. Someone made the cry on the sideline, I don't know where they blew a bugle or something like that, and went, boot it! What, not going to play football? No, boot it! And it becomes like a hot potato. We play long. Naki Wells is 5'6". He's not going to dominate in the air. Right?
Yeah.
So let's do what we did in the first half, the bit that worked, and not do what we did in the second. And it's blind panic. I've seen Zach Viner passable. Zach Viner can passable. Zach Viner can bring the run out of defence with the ball. It's a lack of confidence, and probably
which breeds lack of consistency as well. Which is lack of consistency.
Well, but you will lack confidence when you lose. You've lost 8 out of the last 9 home games, and the Luton manager had the cheek. Nathan Jones had the cheek to say after the game, Ashton Gate is a difficult place to come. It must be somewhere where people are cancelling holidays to go to.
Yeah.
They must think this is great.
No, it's not good. Let's go through the goals. The first one, Mark, classic Bristol City, dead ball situation, again, corner. Collins, who should be picking him up? Because he runs in and the camera behind the goal, you can clearly see him. Yeah, he's not got anybody with him, and it's a lovely little glancing header. Should Bent have been more
dominant
in the box?
Yeah. There was about four players on the line. So, yeah, he leaves his man, runs away from the near post, just turns and heads it. I mean, it's more of a flick across. I don't know if he's just trying it. I think he's probably, if he's got a back to goal, he's trying to flick it across the box to another player. He didn't think it's going to go through all those feet. But it goes through everybody. And the thing was, on Robin's TV, I could actually hear Taylor Moore going, oh no, before it hit the back of the net. So the commentary and the pictures were out of sync, unfortunately. But it was just so sitting.
Yeah, they always are. They always are. You listen to when Gigi scored that great goal against Wickham. 5 seconds before, you were a tinny and go boom.
Yeah, no, it's not good. That would be like if we did these broadcasts, these live on Zoom, you know, there's a delay in whatever comms platform you use. Mark, the second goal, again, a cross by Bree. I was getting behind the goal. You could see Bree, there was no player within 10 yards of him, and then there was a bit of a loose leg from Thomas Callas. And it was just flicked in with the outside of his foot, wasn't it, by Adebayo? Yeah?
Callas is about I've watched the replay about 3 times. He's about a yard away from him. I mean, touch-tight defending. They were talking about it. They were just completely absent, AOL, in the second half. Touch-tight defending. It was abysmal. And the third goal was the same, which we'll come on to. But he's got to get to the guy. He just flicked it. It was a good finish. Bentley had no chance because he dived. It was right in the corner of the goal. But Oh dear! I mean, Dewsbury Hall again. Just picks it up. It was Dewsbury Hall, the guy on loan from Leicester, decent player, the one who had this long range shot that went through Bentley up at Kenilworth Road, and they're laughing. And you can only see one result after that. City, you know, yeah. Under the cosh, and you think, what the hell have we got to do to get a point?
Ian, when they got the equaliser, which was sort of, I want to say game over, but, you're thinking, oh, my God. And then the manager, or the temporary manager, he did four subs in one go. And do you think that was too many, too little, too late, or done out of frustration? Because off went Wells, Lansbury, Rowe and Nash. On came Semenyo, Alex Scott, Jack Hunt and Mr. Glasslegs, Nathan Baker. So the substitutes, Ian, and then within 5 minutes, it was the third goal in 15. So your comments on the subs and that what proved to be the winning goal after that?
I think the four subs were born out of frustration, but I don't think they were that well, apart from Scott coming on, I don't think they were that well thought out. I mean, if Baker was anything like fit, we should have started with three at the back, with him on the left, and got the best out of Kalas, because there's no doubt since Kalas has moved to left centre back, he's been it's been the worst I've seen him play. I've got to be honest. The fact he did four, I think that's pure frustration at letting in the first letting in those goals. Yeah, and the third goal, I mean, Kalas is marking somebody and the ball just bounces off his left foot to the other guy who's completely unmarked. And he puts it in the corner. So, the goals they score. Look, if a Luton player picked the ball up and whizzed it in the top corner from 35 yards, I'd be the first one to say you can't defend against that. But all of those goals were 100%
sloppy,
100% avoidable. And if you're Pearson, you're pulling your hair out, because whoever is coaching our defending from set pieces must be sacked. And I mean,
who is
now.
That? Who is so, doing
is it
that?
Downing, or I say it's Downing, not Simpson. Downing was a defender, wasn't he?
Well, no idea. But they've got to go, because they obviously can't do their job. Although they would say, well, it's a bit difficult because we haven't got anybody that can edit. So next week, go three at the back at Millwall.
Well, bring why couldn't Mary they play? Up,
bring back Maria Appa, play Kalas in the middle, and put Baker left centre back. Play wing backs. If De Silva's anything like fit, get him in. Play Hunt, Sessegnon, don't matter.
Yeah.
And then play three midfielders, including that young lad Scott. And that way, I mean, basically we played 4-4-2 today. It was advertised as a diamond. It was nothing like it. And Nash played on the right and Masengo played on the left, a little bit like, the old Alf Ramsey thing. We had Martin Peters and Alan Ball. Not really wingers, but playing in those wide areas in sometimes in a 4-3-3.
Yeah.
But the only way that you're going to improve it is change the shape. And then if we can cross the ball, when you're chasing a game and trying to score a goal, I wouldn't have thought it was a great idea to take Naki Wells off, but I would have got somebody on the field who could pass to him.
Yeah, well, that's where, as you say, the substitutions are a bit strange. And just finally on that third goal, again, the amount of space that Dewsbury Hall had, it was a similar position to where Bree had crossed, but just sloppy, no physicality and acres of space for them. We talked about Alex Scott coming on. He was lining up with a degree of confidence. It didn't look like it was his first appearance on the Ashton Gate turf, or maybe his second substitute appearance. But that one got blocked. And then just after that, it was Conway offside. Mark, did that look offside to you? It didn't go over the line either, did it?
Well, I'm not sure. I think it may. If it went over the line, it went over the line before the defender put his foot on it, and it broke the plane. It broke the plane on the line, rather than went over on the ground. But is he was behind their defence in the first phase of play, and he moves back, and there's another touch. Yeah. So isn't he onside because it's a different phase of play? I don't understand it.
Well, it's difficult. That had gone. I mean, what was your view on that incident, Ian? It didn't. The ball didn't go over the line anyway. It looked, you know, you couldn't see. You could see the white line, and then the bloke's foot was on the white line as I saw it. But what were your thoughts on that? Oh, he's put himself on mute again.
I think the ball broke the plane of the line. All the ball was behind the line before he trapped it, and you saw it. You saw it looked on the line, or the ball wasn't all over the line. But what I don't understand is the decision, because Conway is behind. He's the only player between the goal and the keeper. So it's just Conway and the keeper. So is he offside from that point, or as he goes back in an onside position in the next phase of play and the ball's touched by another player, is he allowed to touch the ball and put it in the net? That's the question. I don't understand.
Yeah, no, it's a strange one. But look, that was it. Game over. I mean, a couple of things sort of from the actual match action. I mean, interestingly, Joe Morrell, who was went to be one of our bright starlets, he was a non-playing sub for the Hatters. He must be disappointed that he went to Luton, Mark, because he would have got a lot more minutes at Ashton Gate had he stayed here, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I mean, that's just one of those things, I suppose. I mean, I think they said to Joe at the start of the season, you're not going to play, you know, if you want regular first team football, you know, we got an offer from Luton and you can leave. And as things are, he hasn't been a regular starter for them. But that's just football. It's one of those things. I mean, neither either the club could have foreseen the flipping event arising of injuries we've had since then. It's just one of those things. But I mean, if you look at the kids, the young lads that are playing, they're probably not the best under 23s we got. The best under 23s are your Robbie Cundies and your James Mortons. Played at the Football League and were probably, and George Nurse and Cam Pring, who would probably be able to show a level of ability where they can compete. We're asking a lot of players who haven't played league football to actually make the jump. Even Tommy Conway, who did fairly well.
I thought he was one. I thought for me,
he's only played for Bath City. It's very difficult.
I thought for me, he showed up better than I thought Pearson and Bell had done. And one thing that I liked about him was he wanted to get on with the game. We won a corner, and I think we might have been behind by then. The ball went out for a corner over at the position between the dolman and the Atio stand. And he's obviously not the dead ball kicker. And he was waving his arms, and even the commentator picked up saying, come on, get on with it, sort of thing, yeah?
Where we want some leadership. And I think the problem with Sissy, there aren't any leaders on the pitch. There's nobody taking responsibility. There's no Aaron Wilbrahams or Wade Elliotts who are going to pull you out of a hole. I mean, Thomas Callas, you can't see he's a leader of men. He's not...
But he's the one, didn't about 3 or 4 months ago, didn't he get all sensitive that he felt he was putting in all the effort and, you know, he was being let down by people around him? And maybe he did feel that or say that, but you're right, he's not somebody that bollocks his teammates if they get something wrong, you know.
Bailey Wright would do that and Corey would do that, but I think the players were mentally strong enough and had the ability to be able to pull them out of holes, but we just haven't got the experience of the likes of Aaron Wilbraham or Wade Elliott. You know, they brought in the likes of Chris Brunt, Henry Lansbury, who's really an attacking midfield player who's been asked to do a job at the base in midfield, a bit like Chris Brunt, was never a defensive midfield player in his whole career.
No,
he's always played
right
out on the left-hand side.
No.
It's just the whole season's been a mess. And based on results now, you've got to say, isn't Nigel Pearson's position a bit untenable?
Well, we'll come on to that in a minute. I just want to ask about one other player, because this is one that no fam, so you think, well, let's have a physicality up front. Why is Louis Britton not getting a sniff on here? Because he's a different physique to most of the youngsters. And then is there a rumour that he's had his head turned and he's going to be off anyway? Is that what Dave Fevs has alluded to, and that's why he's not being let in? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I can only say from what I've seen is that Nigel Pearson feels that Tommy Conway is ahead of him
in terms of ability, and he hasn't. He's had a couple of substitute appearances, and he played decently today, but that's all you can say, really. I just don't know. Not having seen Louis Britton, Dave would have a much better idea about that. But we could do with some physicality up front, and we also miss Pham's physicality at the back. But like somebody jokingly said, you know, the word was going round on OTIB before the game about what's the real reason why he's missing, and somebody said he must have constipation because he hasn't given a shit for months.
Nice one. Incidentally, Loud Lisa, your sister, Mark, she said she saw Callas looking well up for it and heard him ging up the other players. So, you know, we sometimes form views based on our views about the individuals without necessarily knowing the facts. Look, it's an eighth defeat in nine at home. Eighth in nine. I don't recall. I think we've had maybe nine home matches without a win in the 50 years I've been watching it, you know, which might have been four draws and five defeats or something like that. But eight defeats in nine home games, I've never seen, you know, such bad home form as that in the whole time I've been supporting. What about you, Mark?
No, I mean, the only season I think where we played that badly, and I think we only scored about maybe about 29 goals all season, was in the 88. I mean, I said this in the last podcast, 80-81 season in the second division.
Yeah.
As we were going down the leagues. But I can't recall us losing that many. I mean, it's only our away form, our eight away wins that have sustained us, really, in those first four wins at the start of the season. But
yeah,
I just can't understand. If you look at the team that played against Birmingham when we won 3-0, you know, pressing a team that started the game quite well, creating chances, looking up for it, Pham playing well with his back to goal, holding on to the ball, playing players in. I mean, Callum O'Dowd had got a goal then, and you've got to feel sorry for the guy the next game.
Well, we have still got the injuries. Ian, I think you're back in the room.
Lillian Mears away from that now.
Yeah, Ian, you're back in the room, but still on mute, I think. Here we go. Oh,
no,
Steve.
I'm back. Off mute.
All right, Steve, yeah. I'm going to invite somebody in who's not been on before because he's pressed the invite button, and no swearing or anything like that. Otherwise, we'll take you out straight away. But Steve Byrne, I'm going to let you in the studio. Steve, welcome as a guest. Can you hear us okay? Hello, Steve. Or maybe not.
Is that Steve from Patchway?
I don't know which Steve it is, but Ian, when we were just talking about just going to go on to talk about Pearson, but one player that I forgot to mention, and Tomo said that, I think it was Torquay was saying this, Saluka Jenner's a good player. The Gambian, I don't know how we picked up Saluka Jenner, but I've just read on the internet before we went live that Norwich, Watford and Brighton are all keeping tabs on him. Do you expect to see people like Jenner and Conway maybe start a game just so we find out a little bit more about them? Because we know what we're going to get out of Naki Wells, so why bother playing him for the last two games? Yeah, what's your thoughts on Jenner and playing even more youngsters for the final two games of the season now that we are safe?
It's Saiku Jenner. We need to make a decision because we've got an awful lot of young strikers.
Yeah.
So they can't all play. And if we do what I want us to do, which is go out and get a Kiefer Moore or a Lukas Chukovic or somebody like that, then there's only one place available. And then you've got Naki Wells. Don't forget you've got Andy Vyman and Chris Wilson.
Andy Vyman, yeah.
So that's four. So you've got to make up your mind what you do. They've all got to sign new contracts before they go out. Now, Jana's been out on loan because he got injured playing for Newport. And somebody's just said, you know, Kiefer Moore has got 19 goals this season. This is a bloke I want to sign in a close season. Everybody was telling me he was a donkey. So you've got Sam Bell, you've got Lewis Britton. Now, all these guys would have to send, I mean, some of them have signed extended contracts. They sign extended contracts, they go out on loan, in my opinion. You might want to hold one back as your fifth guy. But, you know, with those four strikers, that's not a bad, it's not brilliant, but it's not a bad strike force.
No.
And you've got height. I think if we get, I think on what I saw today, Definitely, I'd want to see the young midfielder that came on second half, whose name is temporarily skipped.
Alex Scott.
I'd like to see him start the next two games in a three-man midfield, but narrow, not wide. You know, let's not get somebody else who likes playing down the middle and pretend they're a winger. So,
we might as well.
One of my problems with Pearson is I think he could pick a better team than he's picking from what he's got available. That's my gripe with Pearson.
Well, that's a good point. Now, while you're away, and we were just talking about coming on to Pearson, Mark started raising it, and also somebody else pointed out that it is Downing who's the defensive coach, and Simpson is offensive. And we said eighth defeat in nine at home, Ian. Mark and I couldn't remember. We've seen nine games at home without a win, which could be three draws, six defeats, or six draws, three, something like that. Not seen eighth in nine at home, but more importantly, we're winless in eight, two draws and six defeats. And questions are being asked now of Nigel Pearson. Is he the man? And the view on here is that, you know, some people are saying it's utter tosh to even think about it. You put on Twitter earlier this afternoon, you don't think he is. So tell us why you don't think he is, Ian.
Well, I don't think he is, but I don't think we've got any alternative now. And I'll explain why. We haven't got any alternative because we need such a radical turnaround. It's unbelievable. It's not, if Steve Lansdowne thinks it's a bit of fiddling around the periphery and tinkering around the edges, it's not. Right, we've got no identity. We're not an attacking team. We're not a defensive team. We don't defend well from set pieces or open play. We're not a passing team. We don't retain the ball well, particularly when we need to and we come under pressure. So it needs a radical change. Now, I think he'll get the job. And I think Steve Lansdowne is probably trying to get him to sign a one-year rolling contract. And Pearson saying, I want 3 years. And that could be the delay. But he's got first-hand knowledge of our players. And anybody else that comes in, the first thing they're going to say is, well, who have we got and what are they like? Yeah. And we haven't got the time. Because we also need to replace the recruitment team and the medical team.
And that's why the only man currently on the staff at Ashton Gate in any capacity who knows football of enough depth in all areas, except maybe football administration and filling out forms and all the rest of it. But, you know, Pearson's bought and sold as a manager in the transfer market. He is the man with more knowledge than the rest of them put together, isn't he? Would you agree with that, Mark? You know, or Mark, do you think Pearson's the man? Or as Ian said, yes, he is, but because we've got no choice, because there's such a massive job required between the 9th of May when the season finishes and I'll say the middle of July, which is when they usually go away for a pre-season break. It's masses to do. But is Pearson the man?
Yeah, he's the man for me. I mean, McGregor said yesterday in the Evening Post, Bristol Live understands that a three-year deal could be agreed soon if results improve, which is leading to what Ian says. If I was Steve Lansdowne, he'd say, look, based on results, Sir Nigel, I can't give you a three-year deal, but I'll give you a one-year deal, but there's got to be some compromise. Pearson's he's blooded all those youngsters. So, you know, they're going to he would have risen highly in their minds, knowing that they may have a chance of first team football under him if City appoint, which is great for the likes of Janay and Scott, who look lively today. Mobile midfield player could do with that. But it's an absolute bloody mess. I mean, Steve Lansdowne must have known from some of the chatter, or somebody said to him, look, Mark Ashton's been talking to these people. You must be aware. If Ashton leaves, Werhan leaves as director of operations.
Yeah.
So if he suddenly says now, all right, I'll get, you know, I'm not appointing you, Nigel, based on these results, you're not good enough. That leaves us right in the SHIT, like a club who's preparing for relegation next season. For me, because it's an absolute disaster. We'll have to go for another stupid recruitment process unless Lansdowne or God knows who is pointing us towards somebody, maybe an Alex Neil, because I can't see us getting a Chris Wilder. it's just a total nutter mess.
No, but there's going to be people, and there's going to be people, Ian. If it's not Nigel Pearson, there's going to be people. I don't know who these people are, but they're going to be whispering in Steve's ear what he should do, what he shouldn't do, and all the rest of it like that. And you know, we all know, right? But you know, he's easily persuaded by some people. Like this week, or in the interview he did 3 weeks ago, he said Lee Johnson persuaded me to give him. Persuaded me to give him the job, you know. And then somebody brought to my attention an article when Johnson was appointed. We were lucky to get Lee because there were a load of first division clubs, Premier League clubs, wanting him as their on their coaching staff. Was it?
I said ball boy.
Ball boy. Yeah. Well, on their yeah. Don't be. No, we don't have any heightist in this. Ian, sorry, lost my train of thought now. But Ian, you know, who's going to be Pearson's probably got as many detractors as supporters at the moment, I would say, and it's growing, and that will grow even more if they don't do something this week and then say they lose at Millwall or something like that. But if it's not Pearson, then who has got enough knowledge and gravitas to come in and put everything right? And all these people that are hanging back buying their season tickets, myself included, until we know what's happening, you know, if it is somebody like Alex Neil, we're all going to go, yeah, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, any manager or any head coach that you take on is, I'm not saying it's a gamble, it's a calculated risk. If you look at a lot of people said, well, quite fancy Paul Cook, but he hasn't exactly set the world on fire at Ipswich.
No. And Chris Hughton didn't really at Forest, did he?
Although he had to put up the Mucci's 11 or 12 duff signings, didn't he?
Hang on. You look at Rovers. Three managers in a season, none of them worked.
Yeah.
So a lot of it does come down to the players. But then you ask the question, well, okay, how did we get them? Now leave the younger lads aside, because I think they've done nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Who brought in what are now being called lackluster journeymen players?
Yeah.
Who signed a holding midfield player? And I don't think Lansbury's the worst player we've had at the club, and I don't think he's the worst player there now. I mean, at least he has a go. Yeah. But we needed a left back.
Yeah, and we almost got one. But then we were going to pass off Masengo. Wasn't that the deal that this Johansson was going to come? And, you know, Masengo was going to go off up there.
Christian Pedersen.
Christian Pedersen, not Johansson, but Birmingham. Yeah. So whoever stopped that deal did the right thing, because I've seen that Pedersen quite a bit. And I mean, Birmingham fans will tell you he's poor. But we needed a left back. Now, when you look at next season, if we sign a left back, then what happens to Campering and George Nurse? They go back out.
And Jay De Silva.
Well, Jay De Silva, you would say, if you're going to play with wing back, certainly is going to be your first choice left back, right? Yeah. But can we keep him fit? The same you could say is, well, we'll build a midfield around Liam Walsh and Joe Williams. If assuming Liam Walsh signs a contract, are they going to be fit? So there's all these questions. Then there's a huge amount that we don't know. And they're very slow at answering questions. Like, for example, it was rumoured for months that Ashton was on his way out.
Well, the minute... Sorry, Ian, let me just pick you up on there. Not criticise, but the moment Michael O'Leary became a director of Game Changer 20 at Ipswich Town, which was the 20th of July last year, right? That's when he became a director. He and Ashton in cahoots, they have been for 20 years, and you can't tell me that Mark Ashton's mind was 100% on Bristol City, regardless of what Lansdowne might say, and he's been conspicuous by his absence. I think he's only popped up a couple of times this season, but you know, I don't think his mind's been on it. Do you agree with that, Ian? That Ashton not being fully focused.
I don't know, Dave. I don't know. I don't want to speculate where Mark Ashton's mind's been or not been, because I don't know the man, and I don't know. Steve Lansdowne had to come out and go and get Nigel Pearson it seems that he was in the middle of that process, whereas before it was left to John Lansdowne and Mark Ashton. They took 5 to 6 weeks to appoint somebody. And I think Steve was going to go same again until he saw the game against, I think it was Barnsley, that Simpson and Downing were in charge of it. And all of a sudden he started to panic and think, hang on.
We could get relegated.
And we, let's face it, we've only stayed up because of the efforts of others.
Look at the winning start, the first four games. If you applied normal points, average points to that, that's neither relegation form. You say 6 points from the opening 12, yeah? We'd be very, very nervous, but because there's three really crap sides in the division, which is Wickham, Rotherham, and Wickham, Sheffield Wednesday, and either Derby or Rotherham look like they're going to be going down. If you took 6 points off of our winning format starting sequence, we'd be sat there now on 45 points, yeah? And we'd be thinking, you know, oh, we got a problem. But you're right, you know, we've only survived because of the inadequacies of others. But isn't that the case for any side that finishes towards the bottom? Interestingly, who missed relegation on the last day of last season? And that's Barnsley. I mean, how come, Ian, Barnsley, you know, no money, tidy little ground. They haven't got a hamstring predictability centre, as you called it on Twitter. I thought that was very funny. They haven't got a hamstring probability centre. That's what you called it. What? And I think they've got a 35-year-old chief exec, so who's still in short trousers, I guess, and a German manager that nobody had ever heard of beforehand. So what is it? What is it that we seem to get wrong time and time again? Because if Barnsley do get to the Prem, that'll be the second time in 25 years. We haven't been back there in 40.
Yeah,
what do they do?
It's two words. It's management and leadership. So that's why. If you look at the leadership, it's been rudderless is a phrase that I've heard, one of the more repeatable phrases I've heard. So you've got a rudderless ship, and it's been badly managed. So what's been badly managed? The recruitment, because I think it's a good thing, the stadium, and it's a good thing, the hamstring probability
training
center.
Ground. Call it the training ground. It's training ground to everybody else.
Yeah. I've said recently that, you know, Man United have got a training ground at Carrington. Man City have got one in East Manchester. And Chelsea have got a training ground. Bristol City have got the hamstring probability centre, and it's just made for parody. It's laughable. People laugh at the corporate thing. I mean, you know, Luton's manager rubbed it in today when he said, oh, Ashton Gate's a difficult place to go. Well, I don't know how he meant that. I mean, we've lost 8 out of 9. So, no, look, it's leadership and it's management. And unfortunately, we're sadly lacking in that, and it's I said probably 5 months ago, I'd clear out from Mark Ashton down, and I mean it. There's nobody there. I'm not talking about Brian Tinian, because as I said, the academy and the loan side
is doing well. It's doing great.
So if anything, if Nigel Pearson's looking for a quality assistant manager, how about Brian Tinian?
I agree.
And then get Steve Walsh in as head of recruitment or director of football or whatever you want to call
it. And they recruit a football administrator. This is what we were saying privately off air this week, that you could have, and again, taking that a step further, you could have Nigel Pearson as football supremo, supported by an up-and-coming young head coach like the MK Dons guy, for instance, with Russell Martin, with, as you've just said, Tinian. Yeah, get Steve Walsh to come in and do the playing side. Yeah, and then all you need to go out and get, because you're already paying Pearson's wages as a manager, you're getting a slightly lower grade head coach. Then all you need to get is a football administrator type, which is a role that Luke Wareham was doing. And in salary terms, that's a job that would be between 75 and 100 grand a year. And probably, you don't know what Wareham was getting, but that's what that job today would be worth. Yeah,
keep you've it. Got point. Yeah. You've got a point. You've got a point, Nigel Pearson. Before Saturday's game, because based on what you've been seeing, likely is we'll lose to Millwall and we'll certainly lose to Brentford. So why go for correct. More pain? Yeah,
because we're not going to get an easy touch against Brentford in a fortnight's time, because they'll be looking to have home advantage, if there is such a thing, in playing a second leg at home. In fact, they could. You know, I think there's four clubs there that they could even finish as low as sixth, the way things are. So Brentford are going to be up for it, yeah? But Ian said what Barnsley have done that's different. What do you look at Barnsley? And if you're Steve Lansbury, you must be thinking, Jesus, I've put in 200 million quid, right? And I'm still no further forward than I was in 2008 when we got to the playoff final. Yeah, because that was our last zenith. Ignore Caribou Cup semi-finals and beating Man United. You know, that's all we've done since May 2008, isn't it? So what is it?
It's a culture of failure, Bristol City, because we've flirted with the playoffs in the first half of the season, but we never delivered. And you look at a team like Barnsley, who were below us in they were near the bottom of the league. I don't think they won a game before that draw up at. The name of their ground now. Yeah. In the fifth game, to Oakwell in the fifth game, and they got rid of Struber went off to New York Red Bull, I think, and they brought in Ishmael, and they pay very low wages. I mean, I think they got Daryl DK from the MLS. I think there's a sister club over there, because I think their owners own a handful of clubs, a bit like the Watford setup. They got that director of football, but their wages are rock bottom. They'll lose players. I mean, Alex Mowat is out of contract at the end of the season. Decent player. We might pick him up because Watford play to little wages if they don't go up. But they're a great unit. It's all about having a team that are well drilled. They grind out results. Yeah. They go to the end of the game. I mean, they beat Bournemouth away, I think, the other week. You know, probably one of the most improved teams in a division, who then went on a run. And they just guaranteed their place in the playoffs. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Their form has been the best since Christmas.
Did that Ishmael come in this season then, after
yes,
the first?
Yes, he came in. Struber went. He left after the when we played them, or not long after. Then they brought Ishmael in from the Austrian club LASK. I mean, he's 45 years old. He actually played for Crystal Palace for a short time, about 20-odd years ago.
Right,
but he's just drilled them into being a very good unit. I mean, they got Corley Woodrow up front, of course, a player who played for us on loan. I mean, he was loaned around the league. He went to Burton and he played for us, didn't do anything. Dropped down to Barnsley when they got promoted, and then they bought him.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things Tomo said on here. He said, Dave, Pearson is a manager. He wouldn't want to be director of football. I'm talking more about a track-suited director of football, not that suited type. Yeah, he will also want to choose his own assistant manager. Well, Tinian could still be on the bench on first-team match days, because he said, Tomo says, Tinian loves the role he's doing, which he probably does. Where are we now? Mr. Garland, he said, the Barnsley situation is a bit potluck, though. You appoint these unknown names from abroad, and it's probably one in five whether it works out or not. Don't mind these odds myself, though. It was interesting chatting to John Ward this week, which is an interview that I'll put out. I might put it out within the next two midweeks, there being no games. But, you know, he wondered who the hell Benny Lennartsen was. But that's another story. Yeah, listen to that interview when I put that out there. I mean, we're going to talk. The final topic we'll pick up in a second is about is there any investment coming in? But one record that Tom, who works with me, sent me a WhatsApp last night. We are going to have, and only records began in 2013, the lowest number of shots on target in a season. Now, the current record is held by Burton, 409 across 46 games in 17-18 season. Ian and Mark, have you seen how many shots, how far we are behind that record of Burton's? Have you seen that statistic? Either you?
No, I wouldn't want to depress myself. But yeah,
We have had 342 shots on target from 43 games. Make that 346 from 44. That is, right, 54-9, 63 shots less than that shit Burton Albion side that got a 1-1 draw at Ashton Gate. No, that was 16-17 season, wasn't it, when Tomlin blasted the penalty over the top. But that is the root cause of the problem, though, Ian, because it'd be interesting to look at the statistics that on target over the last 3 years, you know, home, because you expect to have more shots on target at home. So with our abysmal home form, Ian, what is it about us over 3 years, not just this season, that we are so unentertaining to watch, certainly in the second half of every season? What you know, because this is Johnson, Holden, and now even Pierce. What is it about us? Is there some Indian curse on the pitch or something like that? Well, both wherever we play.
Right. No, there's no Indian curse on the pitch. It's what I've said before. It's bad leadership, bad management, poor recruitment, poor coaching, and that covers all the bases. You can normally look at a side. The word I use is identity.
Yeah.
And we haven't got one. There is no identity at Bristol City. So all the things you'd normally look at, you know, if I said to you, well, I've never seen Man City play, what are they like? Oh, they're a really good attacking side. They pass the ball really quickly. And all, okay, right. So what are Burnley like? Well, they play 4-4-2. And they do go long and they go into front men who can hold the ball up and then they get players around them and they're a real threat from set pieces. Now describe Bristol City.
Yeah.
Well, we can't attack. We can't defend. We're not very good at passing it. We don't shoot very well apart from Tyreek when he has the odd chance. We got a midfield player who's played probably 70, 80 games, who's never got a goal or an assist, and you think he'd have got one just by accident. And then you start then you start going through the team. We haven't got a left-sided centre-back. We've only got one, and he's injured.
Yeah.
So we haven't got him. Well, what formation do you play? Well, depends. On what? Well, who's fit and what we feel like. So there is zero identity. There are some odd spots of talent, but very odd. And we must be the most boring. I mean, I've been following them for, or going down there, for 50 years.
Same as me, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And I haven't seen, I've seen worse teams. I mean, because people go, oh, no, nobody's worse than this. Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, when we went down from what's now
three to four, to Boston, yeah.
What's now League Two? We had plenty of terrible players, and when we went bust, we had plenty of terrible players. So believe me, I've seen terrible players. But
at least we played with a bit of identity, didn't we? You know, you look at that game, the famous game with Fulham after the Ashton Gate 8. You know, we brought in six youngsters, right? And I think they got relegated. Well, not I think they got relegated that season anyway. But at least there was a little bit of fight. An identity there, and you know that identity hasn't existed since the high press in the first half of 2017 season, has it, Ian? That's the long and the short of it.
Well, if you can you hear me okay, Dave? Because you seem to be breaking up.
Yeah, no, I got you. Yeah, I can hear you fine.
If you look at these. Wickham took 3 points off us, Sheffield Wednesday took 3 points off us, and Rotherham took 6 points off us, and Derby took 3 points off us, and Coventry took 3 points off us. They're below us. So we are.
Sheffield Wednesday didn't take 3 points off us, Ian. We took 4 points off of them.
Oh, sorry. 4 points. Yeah, they got it, forgot it. Backington scored for the draw. So when you look at it and you look at identity, I couldn't explain what it's like, apart from saying we're unwatchable, we're boring, and we need massive change. And that's another reason why I think Pearson's probably the only guy who can give the job, because anybody else is going to say, well, the first thing I need to do is look at the players I got. And when's he going to do that?
Yeah.
Because in 2 weeks' time...
Well, he's not going to have a lot of time unless he sits down and watches it.
I say half of them are off on holiday. The rest of them will be in the hamstring probability centre.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Mark, yeah, Mark.
Treatment, including a lot of the ones that are out of contract.
Including the out of contract ones, yeah?
Yeah, well, you've got to treat them until... So you can't just say, look, mate, I'm sorry you tore your hamstring, but you're out of contract, so clear off. You can't do that.
Well, they're in contract, a lot of them, aren't they, till July anyway. They're under contract till then, aren't they, normally?
Yeah, but it doesn't make any difference. If you get somebody pulls a hamstring and... Now,
yeah.
You've got to treat them until their hamstrings recovered. We know that could be.
Yeah, you've
a
got
year.
A duty of care.
Yes.
Duty of care, I think it's called, isn't it?
Well, it would be a year knowing our injury record with people. I mean, Mark, just final point from you, and then I'll ask Ian the same question. Do we think that, you know, there is going to be some new investment coming into the club, and this explains everything? Is 1st of May a critical date? Might it be the 1st of June or 1st of July? You know, if new people come in with new investment, is this another reason why Pearson hasn't been confirmed, because they might want their own man? It might be a foreign coach. What do you think, Mark? Very briefly, and then we'll same question.
Well,
it'd
have to be some investment to attract a manager of any gravitas. But let's face it, as a Bristol City, we're not likely to be able to attract a name. I think Nigel Pearson is the best that we've got. I trust him to be able to make the club competitive in the league next season. That is keep the club in the Championship is the least he can do. But unless Steve Lansdowne appoints him this week, then I'll be very worried that he'll go, because I can't see us getting any points at Millwall or Brentford. And then it's commercial suicide for Bristol City, because with season tickets on the table and no manager, people will be waiting until the new manager's appointed before committing, unless they're all stupid like me and you. And they'll just do it like, you know, we're like lemons, and we'll just do it again. We'll put ourselves through it.
I think people have probably got a different view of parting with their money these days. Ian, that was one of the final points that you put in your note to me pre-doing the podcast about outside investment. Is this why there is this malaise? Is that there's something going on that's bigger picture than all our local speculation and everything like that? Or is it just an organized cluster, you know what, at the moment?
Well,
so are we getting new investment?
Well, in one way, I hope it is. Because it would explain a lot, wouldn't it? If it isn't, then we really have got a problem. What I'd like Steve to do, because he's the only guy that can do it, is to come out and say, well, I said we needed investment. This is how I see it happening. I want somebody to invest in the football club and the football club only. Forget the rest. Forget the infrastructure. And I want somebody to put in a large sum of money. Now, it's anybody's guess what a large sum of money is to Steve Lansdowne, but let's say it's 30 million quid. So if I'm listening to that and I'm a bit of a Mad City fan and at least a multi-millionaire, but you'd have to be a billionaire to put in that kind of dough. Say, right, I'm going to put in 30 million. Mr. Lansdowne, what do I get from my money? What am I buying?
Yeah.
Do I give you shares in Bristol City? Right, okay, what's that worth? Well, we're going to lose 30 million this year. We lost 10 million last year. And on an ongoing basis, we're probably going to lose 10 million quid a season unless we get in the Premier League, at least.
Sell it, Ian.
what I'm saying is I like to think I'm a really good salesman, and I'm really good at talking to clients and customers. I couldn't sell that. How would you? Because you couldn't answer the questions. People will say, well, hang on a minute. So how about that? The hamstring problematic centre and hamstring probability centre. How about that? Oh, no, you don't get that. All right, okay. Yeah. About this stadium? No. Well, do we get half of it? No. Right, so I'm giving you 30 million quid for half of a very, very unsuccessful and unprofitable team. Yeah, that's about the size of it.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. Perhaps some other people who've got a lot more money than me, and we're ready to gamble would say, okay.
Well, Ian, you've hit the nail on the head there. You've hit the nail on the head. That's the gamble, because if Steve Lansdowne is just selling the football club, as we said all the way along the line, it's you're buying a brand. It's like a US franchise. Will it be US investors or whoever it might be? But they're not going to be people. He's not going to be giving up control. He's just, as you say, $30 million. That just pays for 2 years' losses.
Dave, we don't know if that's what he's trying to do. That's what I'm saying, what seems the most likely. Now, he might say, okay, you buy the club, you get the grant, you buy the ground, you buy the hamstring probability centre, you buy the lot, you give me 150 million quid, I'll sell it to you debt-free, but from then on, the P&L is yours. You might get a different type of person. That'd be an extremely rich person, because the physical infrastructure is worth money, but it's only worth, you see, it's like saying, well, I own a football stadium, and someone's going to say, great, but it's also an event centre. Let's not forget that with Ashton Gate. You can have pop concerts there and God knows what.
And a vaccination centre as well.
Sweat the asset, they call it.
That's what you do, sweat the asset. And if you're investing money, but you'd still be looking at it and thinking, well, you know, because let's be honest, the way things are going, and I think they're only going to get worse and not better, it's virtually impossible for a club without parachute money. And look at the ones who've got promoted and got to the playoffs this season. For a club that hasn't got parachute money to get promoted, it's going to get really a lot more difficult than ever has been, because basically you finish bottom of the Prem. Let's say Fulham. Finish bottom of the Prem. You get 100 million quid. Then you get 42 million in parachute money. Bristol City will get their solidarity payment for last season, which is about 7 million.
Yeah.
Then they'll get another 7 million this. So that's 142 million versus 14 million.
Yeah. No, it's a big difference. And that's where and some person who's a fool with his money, be it an American or whatever, if they didn't buy the whole thing lock, stock and barrel, where you're talking about a price of, I'll say, 200 million plus to take it all, infrastructure, the lot, that's just a figure off the top of my head, but somebody coming in to take on the football club with no debt, because it's just a shell company, with no debt, no assets either, the assets being the unexpired player contracts of those that are there. And somebody could take a punt where they say, right, Mr. Lansdowne, he might even give the football club piece away. Yeah, just say, look, you run the football club from here on in. But
well,
just you've got a deficit, you've got a trading deficit of 20 million. 20 million per annum, right? A deficit of 20 million. So realistically, you could blow 60 million quid on this over 3 years. But if you got to the Premier League in 3 years, 60 million quid, you're going to get three times your money back, even if you only stayed up for one season. Correct? Yes or no, Ian? You know the numbers more than me. But somebody could gamble. You say 30 million. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's enough. But 50, 60 million to have the shell of a football club, no infrastructure, just Bristol City, the name.
Yeah.
And, you know, Lansdowne could let it go because he could say, well, look, there's no debt, but it's going to cost you 30 million just to stand still. Yeah. But if you invest 30 million in players or wages or something like that, and we don't know what FFP is going to look like for the next couple of years because there's going to be a COVID readjustment, the person who would gamble that sort of money could get their money back and some. And once you get on the gravy train of getting to the Premier League, if you become a yo-yo club, you know, you're going to be sustained, aren't you? And there's always going to be, you know, next year it might be that the three going up, only one comes down or two go down. But we want to be in that top 10 of the Championship, which we were sort of heading that way until the last couple of years. We want to be in that top 10. We're getting to the playoffs. When you get to the playoffs, anything can happen. Whoever you are. And that's why Barnsley, you know, whoever owns Barnsley and the Burnley people, they've made a shitload of money for a fraction of the investment that Mr. Lansdowne's done, realistically. And that's in the last...
Because they know the limitations.
Yeah,
they know the limitations. But, no, Dave, it's all about saying, good management.
Yeah, but Dave, you're saying 30 million for a shell with no assets.
Mm.
I don't even see how you get to that number. I mean, don't forget.
No, that's a loss. I'm just saying.
Dave, the club's got still got 20 million quid worth of debt, albeit it's to Steve Lansdowne.
But he might write that off because he might sick to the high teeth.
He might fly to the moon. But what we're talking about is a business. And I don't see. Listen, if someone wants to put that kind of money in it to, you know, say, I'll buy half of Bristol City with no assets, God bless them. The other thing is, will you be allowed to spend that kind of money on under FFP? Because we know that salary cap's not coming in now because they voted against it. You know, the thing that would have saved the smaller clubs from and made them able to compete, they've all turned it down. So if they go bust, stuff them. I don't care. And you've got to see what they're going to do about financial fair play in COVID, because if you look at the last three seasons, we made 10 million, lost 10 million. This season, we're going to lose 30 million. So we might. I think that's what Steve Lansdowne was talking about. We've got a little bit of headroom. But we haven't got much. But I just love Steve to come out and say, right, okay, this is what...
We need a policy statement.
Yeah,
we need a policy
this is what
statement
we're doing.
Between...
And why can't
we need a policy
John Lansdowne,
yeah.
why can't, who's already being paid a salary, why can't John Lansdowne become CEO? Or as well as, you can have CEO and chairman, and then the director of football reports to him. You can have
and a chief operating officer.
No, you don't need a chief operating officer.
Well.
Just get a company secretary. The finance director could do it, or an assistant of the finance.
Well, the player it's the player registrations and all the rest.
Yeah, but
of it,
God,
like
that's the least of our worries. Right? I appreciate it's
I
a
know.
Big worry if you get it wrong, Leroy.
The thing we're poor of at the moment, Ian. The thing that we're poor of at the moment is time. Because if nothing's sorted, you know, as Pearson said, what, a month ago now? You need to get
this
sorted
now. Can't wait till the end of the season.
Well, no.
Yeah, you're right, Mark.
No, he didn't
wait,
say that. He said, what he meant, he explained it. He said the summer, and by summer he means June, July, would be too late. We can't leave it until the summer. So,
no.
So he's got the contract to the end of the season. They've had a face-to-face chat. We're told it was productive, but... You know, I've had lots of productive conversations. It doesn't mean say I've won the project or got the job.
No.
So we'll need to see. I would think there's some haggling to be done over how long the contract is and what the money is. And that could be, you know, because if you look at what Premier Division manager, we spoke about Chris Wilder, and, you know, it came out, you know, it's Sheffield United, who, God bless them, aren't the biggest club in the world. You know, he was on 70 grand a week. Sean Dyche is on that at Burnley. So, you know, he would have been earning really good money. And that means two things. He may not need it again, necessarily, or as much, because you could...
But sometimes people do.
You could do it with bonuses. You could say, look, I know you were on 3 million a year, but I'll tell you what, we'll pay you half a million a year and you'll get a 2.5 million bonus
get us up. Absolutely right. Ian, Mark, it's 75 minutes. We've been chundering away, or just a little bit less than that because we were chundering before we went live. Thanks, as always, for your both of you, your words of wisdom. And as we tend to do every week now, speculate. We talk the hard facts about the games. Thanks to all those that have tuned in. Is that the right word to use? Or listened? 116 unique listeners today. So we're consistently getting that. We're consistently getting around about 500 downloads of each episode, which is really great. We still don't get invited to sit in the ground and watch a game like certain other podcast people do. But then probably with some of the stuff that we say on here, we're not going to be everybody's inofficial in there. Everybody's flavour of the month. Final score today. Oh, it pains me to say it. It was Luton 2, City 3. Mark, good evening. Have a good one. Ian, good evening. And we'll be back after the Millwall game next week. Have a good Sunday, everybody.
Back for the next eulogy. I'll be choosing the hymns. Ian,
right.
you can choose the readings from the Bible.
Yeah.
There we go.
Okay.
Ian, there you
good
go.
Luck.
Have a good one, boys.
Good luck, everybody.
Cheers,
thanks. Bye. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Thanks for listening. Take care.